welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Our show today, Growing Your Own Food, a Simple Approach. Imagine what it would be like to be completely free of supermarkets and drugstores. And while you're at it, can you see yourself never worrying about the skyrocketing costs of food? Today, we have an empowering message about how to produce clean, healthy food and medicine at a fraction of the price you pay now. This program will talk about the secret to having a green thumb, why growing your own food is like printing your own money, the biggest mistake that beginners make and how to avoid it, plus, most importantly, the three steps to getting started right now. And as usual, I have an amazing guest to introduce. She has been called the Martha Stewart of self-reliance and the most dangerous woman in America. Featured as an expert in sustainable living by National Geographic, our guest is a regular on many national radio and television programs. But before I introduce her, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming Marjorie Wildcraft. Marjorie, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Jonathan, for having me on the show.
Marjorie, I want to just jump right into it and ask you, why are you being called the most dangerous woman in America?
Well, imagine what would happen if just 10% of Americans were growing half of their own food in their backyard or in a small lot or on their patio. Imagine if 20% or 30%, what would that do to Monsanto? I mean, eventually they might actually become insignificant. What would that do to our healthcare system? It would be transformed. You know, we're talking about affecting the fortunes of quite a few Fortune 100 companies here by people empowering themselves to take back their own food and medicine. That's pretty dangerous.
I couldn't agree with you more. There are so many places. I mean, I live in a fairly suburban area. You know, it just blows my mind exactly what you're saying. Everywhere you go, you see beautiful front lawns and back lawns and real estate agents. Everybody is selling this idea that you have this beautiful home inside and out and you see the landscaping and the grass. But you know what's missing is food. And I've even seen this reported in the United States that when people have the nerve to grow food in their front lawns and it doesn't look so nice in a neighborhood, that these people are actually being attacked. How crazy a society is that?
Well, here it is. The definition of insanity is if you look outside your window and you're not seeing food growing. That's the definition of insanity.
Wow, Albert Einstein, I hope he's listening. Anyway, as we're moving along here, Marjorie, why don't we talk about how you got started growing your own food? Talk to us about that a little bit.
I used to be a professional money manager working in commercial real estate, and I would structure very high-yielding limited partnerships with investors. And we foresaw basically the bust that happened in the real estate downturn in the early 2000s. We foresaw that and got people out. But what I also saw with that was that with the collapse of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, we're ultimately headed, it's inevitable, we're headed for economic collapse. And I realized with that, the vulnerability of our food system, we really are on the precipice of some major changes. And I thought, you know, of all the things to prepare for, the military can turn a guy into a soldier in 6 weeks. There's a lot of people with medical skills. But the thing that's most important to me is I like to eat 3 times a day. So I said, you know what, I'm going to learn how to grow food.
So this is very interesting for a lot of people who are listening to a program like this. It's not like, you know, you grew up as an organic farmer, you have all this experience. I mean, you were in the financial sector and then you made this change. So I'm just very curious, right? A lot of people would have this question on their mind. How much right now of the food that you eat, how much of it do you actually grow yourself? And please talk to us a little bit about some of the other things you might be growing besides foods.
I grow about half. And half is a good number because, you know, I can easily scale that up to full time, you know, growing all of it if I need to. And yet it also keeps my skills quite honed. So, you know, I'm like everyone else. I've got a busy life. I'm running a business. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm involved in my community. So growing half is a good amount. I also grow a lot of my own medicine, and I do a lot of other things, simple things that you can do right now to start becoming more off-grid. For example, I make my own shampoo, and we have a free report on how to make your own homemade shampoo over at growyourowngroceries.org. You can pick up a copy there, and you'll be starting to make your own shampoo, too. It's one little simple step that you can do and not have chemicals in your hair.
No, and you know, when you talk about self-sustainability, I think, and I'm sure you can relate to what I'm about to say, a lot of people might initially hear something like this and really like push back, not so much in a rude way, but they might just be a little intimidated. They might feel like this is just way too overwhelming for me. I don't feel like I have the skills. Obviously, a person like that is lacking a lot of self-confidence, right, in an area that they're not used to. What do you say to those people who really feel that low self-confidence in this arena?
Get started with just a small something, maybe even just some herbs on a windowsill. But let's step back a second, and you know, our organization has a saying called homegrown food on every table because we really see that's the solution to so many problems that we're facing right now. And in some ways, that's kind of a joke because, you know, throughout all of history and recently up until like the last century, that's all there was homegrown food on every table. So, of course, you can do it. Your grandparents did it, and all of your ancestors did it, and I know it's a new skill, but, you know, and there's going to definitely be some trial and error, but the rewards are so well worth it.
Isn't that interesting what we are talking about? I mean, it's like you really caught me in the conversation here. I've often used this word disconnect, and it's actually quite sad that we have disconnected ourselves from something, as you're saying, everybody did it. There wasn't a podcast, there weren't programs, there weren't downloadable links, you know, back in the day on how to do this. You know, it was just sort of passed from one generation to the other. Hey, watch what I'm doing. Look at what I'm doing here and you'll learn and you'll do it as well. I mean, isn't that the truth? We were doing this forever. And in such a very short period of time, we've gotten so involved and influenced by convenience foods, right? All those frozen foods, the refrigerator, the freezer, didn't that really change it all for, I mean, at least people in the Western world, no?
We have lost in two generations one of the most vital skills that is important for your sustenance and survival. And if I told you, do you think that we could lose the ability to read in two generations? You'd probably say, no, there's no way. Well, something more important than reading, which is being able to provide your own food, you know, backyard food production, how to raise chickens or grow a few vegetables, it's been gone in about two generations.
And what you're saying is so true because we see it across the board, certainly in the United States, this level of panic, right? When there's a storm that's coming, or, you know, even now when we talk about this idea of Ebola and maybe somebody's going to have to be quarantined. You know, what on earth are you going to do if you're not allowed out of your home, if people don't want to come by and see you? I mean, can you imagine this? Or in a storm where food supplies are cut off and people now have to just live in their home with just what they're able to do in that area and not be able to go to a store a mile, 2 miles, whatever, away and pick up what they want. I mean, that's a really precarious situation, isn't it?
That is, but even more beyond that, the commercial food supply is very unhealthy. There's, you know, just so many pesticides and toxins and GMOs. You know, growing your own food makes so much more sense, even from a short-term emergency, but from, you know, apparently it's legal to kill people if you do it slowly. So even in the longer-term sense, it makes sense to start growing your own food right now.
That's a whole other podcast, what you just touched on there. And I do plan on getting involved in all of these subjects so much more in depth with programs like this and the Natural News Talk Hour that do my weekly program, which is on the weekend, where we really get involved in a lot of subjects in very detailed ways. But when you're talking about these things that supposedly our government health officials are so concerned about, the health of the country, the health of its citizens, I don't believe any of that at this point now, like you say, because legally you can go out and you can buy all of these toxic, horrible foods. And you know what their answer is? Usually it's a very political answer, something in a sense of, well, we leave that to the private sector. You know, it's a free world and everybody's entitled to do what they want. But what about a government leader really leading and setting the tone for society and coming right out and saying, we don't want these chemicals in our food? I mean, none of that is going on now, certainly in the United States.
No, it's not. You look at, there's the revolving door policy of executives that go back and forth between Monsanto and the USDA at the highest levels. The same with Syngenta and the FDA. You know, we're basically are dealing with, a monopoly that controls and our food supply and our government.
And they're profiting off these horrible foods, off the people who buy them, and they clearly do not care enough to make any change in the system. So I'm glad you're spending some time with us. Marjorie, you had mentioned before about this belief you have, and you know, more than a belief, I don't mean to belittle it. You had a big history in the financial industry, and you referred to the U.S. economy collapsing. I mean, how strong do you feel about this? Talk about it for a couple minutes, and when do you feel like something like this is going to happen? To what extent do you see the collapse?
Well, let's face the facts. Our country is bankrupt. We are bankrupt right now. I don't think there's even enough tax revenue to cover the interest payments. So we're borrowing money to pay interest on the debt. That's beyond bankruptcy. So when is it going to happen is a tough call. I do have a report that I've written, and you're more than welcome to go take a look at it. It's called Five Red Flags with Indicators That You Can Watch. And there are five indicators that I generally try to keep my thumb on of like, oh, you know, when I see this going up or down, it gives me an indication, because predicting it is pretty hard to do. But the number one indicator that I'll share with you right now, and you're going to laugh, is the price of food. So I've always been interested in why don't we have civil unrest? Why aren't Americans rioting? Why aren't we in the streets over stuff? I mean, clearly you can trounce all over your constitutional rights and people just don't seem to mind. They're going to click back into Monday Night Football. What is it? And historically, and there's actually mathematical models that prove this, that the things that make people riot are food. And when the cost of food gets too high, that's when you're going to start seeing civil unrest. That's when you're going to start worrying about, you know, armed gangs and big trouble and, you know, riots and flash mobs and all these type of things that we're concerned about. And the way to watch that is going to be not from the Consumer Price Index, which is basically a fairy tale created by, you know, there's the numbers that are manipulated and definitely don't reflect reality. One of the best and honest, most honest indicators we have, surprisingly, is the UN's FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization, has a food price index that fairly accurately indicates the true price of food. And when that index gets fairly high, and if you remember in 2008, it reached a peak. And sure enough, that was back in a time when our gas prices were escalating. Costco was limiting you to getting three bags of rice at a time. You couldn't get more. There was all kinds of nervous stuff going on in the financial sectors. So that price indicator of food is a very good indicator that, you know, if that level starts getting very high and staying very high, you have a very strong indication that things are going to be changing dramatically. And that's definitely one of the indicators to keep an eye on. And again, to get the whole full thing, because we've got a short show here and we're moving along quickly, go to the website at growyourowngroceries.org and you can pick up a copy of that discussion that we have going on the five indicators that I look at.
In shifting gears, I want to definitely spend a little time in talking about your recent trip to Cuba. I want to also find out what your biggest mistake was in growing food and how we could avoid it, and a few other items as well. But before we get there, I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Marjorie, let's start off with this trip to Cuba that you had. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, why would anybody go to Cuba? I mean, who's even thought about Cuba, right? Cuba underwent economic collapse. They were a trading country that was a satellite country to the Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, almost overnight, Cuba lost 60% of their oil imports. They lost all of, they had sacrificed all their local food production for big ag commercial production for that they traded in Eastern Europe. So they, overnight, the lights went out, the buses stopped running, the water no longer came out the tap. People were hungry. It was just basically a collapse scenario that happened almost overnight. Their economy crashed. So I wanted to go there. I went there with a tour organized by the Millions Against Monsanto. And it was a group of farmers and local food activists that were saying, because the first thing that people did was, it took a while for the government to kind of get its act together to start helping the people. And the first thing that people did was started backyard food production. It's what people in crisis throughout our historical times, it's what humans do. So, you know, that pretty flower pot, you ripped out the flowers and you started putting tomatoes in there. And then that banana tree that had been such a nuisance before, dropping fruit on the paveway, was now all of a sudden a gold mine. And so I went there to spend a lot of time with the survivors and talk to them about their experiences and look at the techniques that they used in order to get through that period. Of all of the troubles they went through, the biggest thing that they talked about, the biggest thing that they remembered, was hunger. There were lots of other issues that happen in a collapse like that, but by far and large, food is always the biggest issue that people are concerned about in any type of crisis. So that experience was really foundational. I have a passion for interviewing people who have survived through different collapse scenarios, and getting to go to Cuba was one of them.
What a great opportunity to learn what it really means to be self-sustainable. I mean, obviously, in a situation like that, look, you don't have a choice. So again, I know a lot of people will be very interested in something like this. Talk to us for a few minutes, Marjorie, about the biggest mistake that you've made in growing your own food. And obviously, how can all of us benefit from your experience and avoid something like that ourselves?
Yes. Well, the biggest mistake, so we got into it out of fear and panic. I mean, I was deeply concerned about economic collapse, and I thought it was going to happen very quickly. And it has. We're actually still very much knee-deep in that process, and it's astonished me that it hasn't happened yet, to be quite frank with you. But the biggest mistake we made was I ran out and tried to grow, you know, my husband had had the experience of his grandmother used to grow a huge amount of food, and she had a big acre garden. And when I said, "Hun, I want to start growing food," he thought a nanny, and he plowed up an acre. That's just way too much land. Well, I mean, we had the land, but there's just no way that as a beginning gardener or a beginning food producer that you can handle that much size. So my recommendation and the biggest mistake we made was we tried to do too much all at once. Start small. Start with a little 50-square-foot bed, 5 feet by 10 feet long. Start with just a small flock of chickens or maybe just a few rabbits. Don't try to go hog wild and plant that orchard with 50 trees in it. You know, don't get a herd of cattle. You know, start small, get a few things working well, and then build from that.
No, I think that's super advice. You know, it's funny, as you were talking, it's not really funny, but I mean, I learned from an organic food co-op, you know, is one of these places where you can just sort of buy a share and get the food that's produced locally, right? And it was all organic, but quite interesting. It was run by a young couple that eventually married and they have kids now and they still run it. It's fantastic. The food is absolutely delicious. It was actually given to them by local government, and they started this co-op, this whole organization, with 1 acre of land. And it blew my mind when I volunteered to help out, you know, pulling out the garlic and, you know, pulling out the greens and all of this. On 1 acre, Marjorie, they're feeding 400 families every week.
It's astonishing. And another question I frequently get is, how much land do you need? And I tell people, 2 acres will completely wear you out. There are examples, most organic farmers are farming only anywhere from 1 to 10 acres. So you don't need a lot of land. And there's a huge amount. There's actually examples of small CSAs, what you're talking about, community-supported agriculture. There's examples of that, of people doing it in suburban backyards where they're growing an abundance that they can sell to neighbors and to restaurants and, again, to specialty niche outlets actually make a surprising living from it. So there's a tremendous amount you can do with what you have.
See, that's a beautiful thing, too. No matter where you're at, you know, let's say you're more of activist-minded and you really want to make a difference in a community that you live in, it really wouldn't take much space to be able to do something like that. Or if you're somebody that really does genuinely need to make more money, what a beautiful way of making money by growing food, working hard to feed yourself, your family, and then of course charging some money for those who aren't doing that. Those people would be happy to give you money. They'd be grateful. And what a great feeling it would be for someone like you to be able to do something like that. I'm just curious, as we get off this topic, Marjorie, I just have to ask you though, in reality, what do you think for, say, a family of four, what would it scale up to? What kind of land space would you need for, say, you know, those tomatoes and potatoes and cucumbers and greens and carrots and, you know, even herbs, like you say, and some medicines, maybe a tree or two? What would the space really look like for that family of four?
You know, really, a half acre would be plenty of land for, you know, if you wanted to be even a higher level of self-sufficiency where you're generating all your own fertility and a lot of the food for your animals, 2 acres, again, is really for a family of four. That's a huge amount of land to work. It really is.
So I'd like to get into now, as we promised at the beginning of the podcast, give us that secret about having a green thumb. What would you say that would be?
I came from the corporate business world and I just didn't know anything. In fact, my first gardens were utter disasters and I remember being in tears. I used to regularly sign checks that were $100,000 or $500,000 in the business world and then, you know, pretty well up there and involved with bankers and lawyers. And I had a career that was, you know, something I really had worked on and valued. And then to be sitting in front of this tomato plant where nothing is growing and just in tears and the dirt, it was quite a thing. And the biggest thing that I realized, I read the seed packet and I said, you know, plant the seeds and water them and then come back in 3 months. It just doesn't happen like that. And our soil, like almost everybody else's soil, is not very good because, you know, our ancestors knew the value of good soil. And all, long ago, those areas have been paved over. That's where all our cities are. And so most of us that have land generally do not have very good quality soil. And anyway, my garden was pathetic. Everything was dying. And I went around to organic farmers and gardeners, and my neighbor, Brendan, who's about a mile down the road from me, has the biggest, most beautiful, healthy vegetables you could ever imagine. And it always amazes me, you know, sometimes people are really good at something and they don't even know why. And it took me a while to realize that the main difference between my garden and Brendan's garden was mine was just the sand that I had there, basically, and his garden was 2 feet deep of rich composted horse manure. And the secret to a green thumb is having a deep, rich, fertile soil. Most of us just think the soil is there to hold the plant up, but that's not true. There's a whole world of microbiological activity and minerals and salts and enzymes and things that the plants need. And when those plants are healthy, they're going to be strong. They're not going to have as many insect problems. They're going to produce bigger vegetables for you. It's going to require less watering. They're going to be less susceptible to temperature swings. You're going to enjoy growing food when you have good soil. And when you don't, it's going to be miserable.
I got to be honest with you, Marjorie, you got me very excited about looking at this whole thing so much more. What is the easiest food sources to grow? Talk to us about that and why are they so easy?
Now, this is going to surprise a lot of people, and I get a lot of kickback from people on this. The easiest food sources to grow are actually animal products. They are not fruits and vegetables. Now, I want everybody to grow a diversity of things because it's vitally important that you do grow a diversity of things. But the easiest things are going to be animal products. If you have a pond or water, that is ultimately the easiest thing to grow. But most of us can't, you know, that's actually going to involve more land and rainfall or things we don't have. But chickens or rabbits are going to be a lot easier. And here I'll explain one simple reason why. For example, and I show this to people in my video set called Grow Your Own Groceries, but I have a free-range flock of chickens, and those chickens just basically run around the yard. I don't have to open a coop for them in the morning, and I don't have to open a coop, close them up at night. They get up and out of the trees on their own, and they go get their early morning breakfast so I can sleep in. When it's too hot, they just go into the shade. when they need water, they'll walk over to the watering system I set up for and get the water they need. I've planted a lot of food sources for them, so I don't really even need to feed them that much. They gather the food by themselves, and when I need to, I will go out there and toss them some food, but it's usually pretty rare. So most of the time, I'm just collecting eggs. But my vegetable garden, for example, when it's too hot, I've got to make sure they're shaded. I got to need constantly be checking the soil levels to make sure that there's enough moisture or not too much moisture. And if it needs water, then I need to bring the vegetables water. I need to bring the fertility to the garden. I can't go get the vegetable plants to go out and go get their own nourishment. So, growing plant sources are actually more difficult than animal products. And so animal products are the easiest. In fact, one of the most efficient food sources you can grow is just to have a small backyard flock of chickens for eggs.
We've got some great tips to close out the program with just a few minutes left. But before we get there, I just want to thank again our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Marjorie, with just a few minutes left, got a couple other questions I'd like to ask you. Talk to me about why you emphasize community so much.
Yes. Yeah, so, one of the other biggest mistakes of people who get into preparedness is they say, I want to get away from populations. And they're right about that. But they book it and they get way out in the middle of nowhere. It actually takes, humans are social creatures, and it actually takes a community to grow food. One example, let's go back to those chickens, that flock of chickens you have. Just for genetics, you're going to need to swap roosters with somebody sometime, so that way you can, keep your genetics going, or seed saving. There's lots of species of plants that it's going to be best, squash, for example, cross breeds very easily. So it's going to be best if those two are separated by a good distance. So I'll grow spaghetti squash and you grow winter squash, maybe acorn squash. That way they'll be isolated and we'll trade with each other. Also for diversity of, maybe something happens to my tomato crop, but yours is doing gangbusters. So we can work that out that way. So it really does involve community in growing food.
So I'd also like you to get into, which a lot of people would be interested in, talk to us about the top three tips for getting started in growing food. I know you mentioned start off small, but what else have you got for us?
Yep, let's do that because that's a great recap for the whole thing. First of all, start off small. Just start with a small garden. Small successes are better than big failures, right? So start off small. The second thing is we talked about the secret to a green thumb. So you start a compost pile. If you don't have a lot of area, maybe just get a little worm bin that you keep under the sink. If it's working properly, then there will not be any offensive odor that comes out of it. In fact, if there's an odor, that's telling you that something's out of balance and you need to adjust it. They make amazing fertility. That would even be wonderful just for some windowsill plants if you're just in an apartment. You got a yard, make one in the backyard. So start a compost pile or start coming up with some way to create fertility for your plants. And the third thing, also again summarizing on our talking about community, get to know people in your community who are growing food. I mean, if you've been driving by that house that has that fantastic set of tomatoes out there every spring, stop by sometime, bring them a little gift. And I promise you this one thing, people who are normally, you may not really ever want to spend time with them. They might be curmudgeons or grumpy or whatever. When they're in their garden, they're totally different people. Bring them a little gift and say, hey, what variety grows real well here? Or, what's that that you got growing? Where did you get the seed? Or could I get some seed from you? Or what advice do you have for, this dealing with this pest? That's where the real gold is somebody in your neighborhood that knows what's going to work for you best locally. And, get to meet some new friends. So, get involved with the local community, maybe some organic gardening clubs. That's my third tip, and make some new friends.
Marjorie, you're a great educator when it comes to this. That's why I so appreciate your time today. I want you to talk for a couple minutes about why your system is working so well. And of course, if people really want to dive into this more, where can they go to get more information about your entire system?
We have several websites, but they all are Grow Your Own Groceries. So growyourowngroceries.org is a free online blog with lots of content. The latest article that's really causing a buzz is it's Americans Are Corn-Fed Dummies. That's a great topic. Read that one. You'll love it. The place where you can get the video set is at growyourowngroceries.com. And why I'm so passionate about this is, look, our food supply is toxic. We also are on the precipice of such tremendous changes. If it's not epidemic or pandemic or economic collapse, it's EMP or who knows what threats are coming. Having some self-reliance is a really good thing at this point in time. Growing your own food is so empowering. It's so wonderful for your own health and sanity, and it does such good things for the earth. There's absolutely no reason not to do it. It's a little bit of work and it's a lifestyle change, but I promise you the rewards are tremendous. So I really want to encourage as much backyard food production as possible.
Wow. Marjorie, thank you so much for helping us out today.
Jonathan, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.